guest this week, Les is Butler. That's right. Gerard Butler returns to the podcast to talk about his new film, Plane. Plus, Les is Coulter. That's right. His co-star, Mike Coulter, is also with him, talking also about Plane. How exciting. What a start to the year. All that and more on the movie podcast. I would quite like to never see Northampton Services again. It'll become clearer why later in the show. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Improv Podcast. It is a Wednesday. We are recording this on a Wednesday. Usual podcast recording day is a Thursday, but we brought it forward by a day because
we want to give Hollywood more chance to release trailers after we
more chance,
record.
Yes. If something happens in the next 24 hours, 24 to 48 hours, we will reconvene and maybe do a little news button or something. But I'm unavailable tomorrow. Helen, you're unavailable tomorrow.
I am.
Yeah, what are you doing, Helen?
I'm going to be doing some Fablemans interviewing.
That's right. Who are you going to be interviewing, Helen?
I'm going to be interviewing Steven Spielberg.
There we go. See? There we go. Anyway, welcome to my two colleagues of such lethal cunning. Helen O'Hara, Geek Queen, is here already.
Yes, hello.
Hello. And great big fucking nerd, James Dyer, is also here. Hello, James.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am full of beans.
Are you really?
No, not really.
That's a healthy balanced lunch.
I had a sandwich for lunch. There were no beans.
I had a peri-peri chicken wrap from Waitrose just before I saw a film, and I ate it in the working title screen room. And that's right, Tim and Eric, I have left crumbs all over the seat.
Oh, Chris.
That's right.
That nice screening room.
Nice
well.
Screen room. Awesome job. Well done, Tim and Eric. Which Tim and Eric do you prefer? Do you prefer Tim Bevan and Eric Fellner, founders of Working Title, one of the greatest, in fact, maybe even the greatest British production company of all time? Of all time.
Whoa, mama.
Production company, not studio. So I'm not saying none of your Ealing. None of your
say.
Hammers.
All right, okay. Well.
Production company. All right, okay. Take that one. Chew that over for a few seconds, okay? Tim and Eric from Working Title.
Okay.
Or Tim and Eric from Tim and Eric.
I'm going to go ahead and say Working Title.
So am I, but mainly because I don't fully understand who Tim and Eric from Tim and Eric is.
Oh my God. Their comedy is made for you.
It's
esoteric.
It's what, not
it's
funny?
It's surreal. It's for many people not funny. It's the comedy of being deliberately unfunny in some ways until it becomes funny. They specialize a lot. So it's Tim Heidecker and Eric Wareheim, who've been on this podcast for Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie.
Uh-huh.
The joke being that it didn't cost $1 billion or indeed make $1 billion.
How funny.
There were many, many more jokes than that. Jeff Goldblum plays a character called Chef Goldblum.
Was he a chef?
I can't remember. They're very funny.
Clearly.
Tim and Eric from Working Title, take it by a nose. How are you both?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it hasn't been the best week.
Oh.
Spoilers for the review section. But you know.
We did have quite the Monday, to be fair. And I dodged the
Was it Blue Monday?
It was actually, but like, you know, maybe
yourself?
That's why they put that film on that day. I don't know. But
it was a bit of a mood shift. We went straight from that to another film.
Another film, which we'll talk about, which was very good, but also not super cheery.
No.
And then it's just been a weirdly stressful week. Like
you know
nothing
what you need,
like
Helen?
Little bits of stress.
You need to do a podcast with two of your favorite people. And I hope that happens for you.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed. Maybe tomorrow at the Fableman's Junket, you know?
Maybe tomorrow.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed indeed. Well, listen, I hope this does cheer you up and the millions listening at home that we can put a bit of a spring in your step. Jimbo, how are you?
I'm okay, actually. Yeah, I'm good. This week is a lot for me as well. It's not been stressful, but I have an awful lot of things to watch this week. And yes, but this is the plus point. I had an awful lot of things to watch, mainly for the Pilot TV podcast, obviously. But I didn't want to watch most of them. And all the ones I've seen so far have been surprisingly delightful. So I'm feeling quite
nice.
Chipper because lots of things I had written off, how unlike me, before seeing turned out to be really good.
So
yay. Mm. Yay for unexpected gems.
Do you want to hear the second half of James Dyer's sentence? Do you want to hear more from this great guy? Sign up now to James Dyer Plus, just £1.99 a minute.
Yeah, it's onlyfans.com/James C. Dyer.
Have you considered that? Have you ever considered an OnlyFans?
Oh, 100%, yeah. Yeah. It's me going, on the Pilot TV podcast this week, except naked.
That is so not different enough.
That's basically
from when we're recording remotely.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing.
My OnlyFans would be people would pay money and then I would put clothes on.
Yeah, yeah.
I like a troll stripper.
Like a troll stripper?
Yep, it's a Terry Pratchett joke. Look, don't worry.
Oh, okay.
Because trolls like naturally don't wear clothes, so
yeah,
it gets them all head up when they put
no, because they're
on.
Made of rock.
Mm.
I bet they are.
Except for the King of the Trolls, him Diamond. Anyway, we're getting possibly slightly off track.
The King of the Trolls in what, Pratchett or Tolkien?
Pratchett. The trolls don't have a king in Tolkien.
That you know of.
That
don't be so trollist.
I mean, okay, I mean, you know, there could troll. Be... like, there isn't, though, but like...
You don't
there,
know, there's no, a king
I'm
goblin.
I'm pretty sure. Like, there's a lot of lore out there. I feel like, you know, JRR would have mentioned it.
What you're saying, actually, that trolls are much more enlightened, they're more likely to be a democracy than a monarchy.
I'm saying, that they don't have a well-developed governmental system at all.
Yeah.
What with the whole oppression by Sauron?
They don't believe in centralized leadership.
That's correct. Yeah. I'm glad we got that straight. I'm sure everyone's fascinated.
Yeah.
No, I'm bummed out. All right, we have questions. Shall we have questions?
Bring them.
We have questions. Not many.
Not many questions.
Not many. I did it in a panic. I was on my way here from a screening and I, you know, I toyed with the idea of renting a lime and then cycling here to get here quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, well, it won't be quicker if I'm being scraped off the pavement, which would be what would happen if I were to cycle around London. But nevertheless, I'm going to ask for questions. I might retweet myself and just do any more for any more, not to imply that these are rubbish. But there we go. Apparently we have 17 questions. Roscoe Keniston says, on the back of The Last of Us.
Yes.
Woo.
Any games or books that still haven't been made into movies or... what's that? James, what's that word?
Oh, yeah. I thought... Tvushas.
That you would like to see or would lend itself well to an adaptation. Any games or books that have...
Well, from a game point of view, I maintain The Last of Us is the greatest narrative story in all of video gaming. So that's, you know, that box is well and truly ticked.
What about a Shadow of the Colossus or something like that?
Shadow of the Colossus is more of a mood piece. It doesn't have much in the way of a story.
Exactly my point.
Mm.
What about Mario Kart?
What about Portal?
Let's talk about Portal.
Do you know what?
We should talk about Portal.
Helen, the cake is a lie, but that is not a bad idea.
Right?
Actually, I would 100% watch. Okay, let's roll with this. So Portal, okay. Portal, really good idea. But while we're in the kind of Valveverse, I think Half-Life generally could work quite well.
Half-Life or Half-Life 2?
Half-Life 2.
Sorry, I know stuff.
But who are you and what have you done with
Mainly so we get Half-Life 2 Episode 2, because obviously we got Half-Life 2 Episode 1, we never got
I was about to
two.
Say, yeah.
But also System Shock would be a really good one as well. And System Shock 2, I think those would make excellent adaptations while on the gaming front. But
my brother doesn't play that one. So
okay, sorry. So, but no, Portal's good because Portal is both, you know, fun and funny.
I hate you.
Yes.
Both.
Yeah.
Okay. Helen, you've read...
I have read books, yes. Well, our other favourite that we talked about recently, Empire of the Vampire, would be quite a fun, probably TV show. It's a bit sprawling.
Yeah,
I think,
but I'm for all fancy novels from now on. I'm just saying, you know, it's a TV show. I'll get the fuck out.
I don't know. I mean,
no films.
The Lies of Locke Lamora is a nice little, like, heist drama. And I do feel like heists are generally better in movies than on TV.
Yeah,
so I'd be tempted to try and find a way to make the Locke Lamora book/books into a film series rather than a TV series. I have long wanted the Miles Vorkoskin books by Lois McMaster Bujold to become a crazy space opera series with probably like Daniel Radcliffe playing Miles Vorkoskin. So he's basically this guy who's born into this very militaristic future society. So colonies on all the planets, you know, humanity spread across the stars. His planet happens to be kind of based in czarist, almost kind of Russian aristocracy. And he's, you know, he comes into a very, very noble family, but he's hurt in an attack on his mother before he's born. And he's born with like weak limbs like Mr. Glass and small, where everybody else is this warrior culture and they're all like tall and strapping. And everybody hates him and he's kind of like picked on and kind of looked down on until it turns out like he's basically a strategic genius and he ends up being sent off on an off-world mission.
Does he get his Ender away?
He kind of does. He that was
good joke.
A bad adaptation. But he ends up accidentally becoming admiral of a fleet of space pirates and having a double identity where he's admiral of the fleet of space pirates, but also, you know, this increasingly powerful nobleman's son back on his home planet. But it's also just really fun. It's inclusive. It's really clever. I love it. So somebody should make the Miles Rokoskin books.
I tend to reel out the same titles again and again when we do this. So I'm going to go with something slightly different and say Jack Campbell's The Lost Fleet series would make an excellent TV show. So I haven't read all of them by any stretch. I've only read the first one, which is Dauntless. But the whole of the idea of this is future. The Earth essentially ships decide to. There's two warring powers. Ones I can't even remember the names of the two different factions, but they decide they're going to end the war in one fell swoop, and the whole fleet jumps deep into enemy territory to engage them, and it goes horribly wrong, and they all have to retreat. And so they are on the run back to their own space, but obviously it would take a very, very long time to get back, and they're constantly being pursued by the enemy, and lots of stuff happens. So it's a bit Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica, 33.
Yeah, all of that. Length. It's all of that, but without Souls. Silence. But it could really, really work. And the idea, the thrust of it is that just before they go into this battle, they find this ship with a guy in suspended animation, and he is a guy who had been seemingly killed in a conflict a long, long time ago. But actually, he has been sort of almost deified as this legendary war hero that everyone, Black Jack, they call him. I can't remember his last name. But and so people use him in common speech. Oh, you know, if only you were Black Jack, whatever his name is. And then they get this real guy, and it's whether or not the reality lives up to the legend. And he has to take over control of the fleet, and then he's fighting with the legend of himself, essentially. But yeah, it's really interesting.
Sounds fun. I've read the first one.
Oh, you've read the first one? Yeah.
Ages ago.
Yeah, same here. That's why I can't remember any of the names.
Yeah.
But I remember it being a lot of fun.
Yeah, that could work.
So I would like to see that.
Is there any chance we could put that behind a paywall? What you just said?
Oh my God. Please. You asked us.
I know I asked, but I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. You shouldn't have done it.
You didn't realise we would answer the question.
We also need, and I am banging the same drum here, more Diana Wynne Jones stories. So A Tale of Time City, Magicians of Caprona. Basically, Magicians of Caprona is like Romeo and Juliet if everybody had magic and was basically like having giant like magic fights in the streets instead of duels, which are boring because, like, what's a sword when you could be having a custard pie fight, you know? And A Tale of Time City is this time city where you can, like, travel to different points on the timeline and basically somebody is doing that and screwing things up.
Ooh. You've just made me think, when you said that the city, it made me think of Sigil, the City of Doors, which made me think of Planescape Torment, which is one of the best narrative video games ever made that isn't The Last of Us. And I think Planescape Torment would make a fantastic TV series.
Okay.
That would be so good. I mean, the actual story is far too complicated to go into now, but essentially a guy who wakes up with no memory and is immortal, and he has to work out why he's immortal and what the hell is going on. It takes place in a place where it's almost like the hub city where all worlds collide, where you can, like, you get port keys which can essentially take you to other worlds, and it's set in the center of the planes. So it's a good ship.
Can we do the rest of the podcast now, please?
Oh my
please.
God, just because you didn't speak for like 3 minutes, you're freaking out.
The game has 80s pop star Sheena Easton.
Sheena Easton.
Playing a tiefling.
Yeah. Yes, a singer.
Robert Delancey's in it. He does a voice of Mitch Pileggi as well.
Ooh. Join the queue, mate.
Yeah, the main character is called The Nameless One.
Well, that's unoriginal.
Yeah, it's also a little...
Took the day off and like they came up with that one, didn't they?
Self-contradictory, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a
flying
skull.
I'm called the Nameless One. Well, you aren't anymore, are you?
Yeah.
By definition.
That's true.
I'm the man with no name.
Game has
apart from this one.
Has a necrophilia gag within the first 5 minutes.
Ooh, speaking of necrophilia.
Oh.
Yeah.
Please finish the sentence quickly.
It's not necrophilia specifically, but there is a sort of necromancer space... lesbian necromancer series, if you're into that kind of thing. It starts with Gideon the Ninth.
I'm interested!
And it's weird, and I loved it.
Lesbian necromancers.
Space lesbian necromancers.
Yeah, it's called.
No, they went with Gideon the Ninth.
Oh, yes, that's on my to-read list. Mm. And then there's Nona the Ninth and something else the Ninth.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm here for
Harrow
these.
The Ninth
that's
is the
it,
second
Harrow
one.
The Ninth.
Nona is the third.
Yes. Yes, those are on my list to be read after the books I'm currently reading.
Space lesbian necromancers.
I
was going to say the Bible.
Very good.
Which
bit? Yeah,
which
Jesus.
The bit with Jesus.
Well, they're already on top of that.
They're
in the Passion of the Christ too.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Pop Goes Cathedral. He's back again.
Hey, we've definitely used that before.
We've definitely used that before, but I seem to, I honestly, I could cut and paste your conversation from an earlier show.
I know.
into that bit. But you mentioned some new books there. I was writing them down. Space Lesbian
Necromancers.
I honestly passed out after Space Lesbian.
Space what it says on my business card.
Necromancers. yes, indeed. So apparently Mel Gibson, as Empire Australia once famously opined on the cover, you gotta love Gibbo. And I think a lot of people would probably not, but he is hard at work apparently on Passion of the Christ 2, Jesus Boogaloo.
I don't understand, because he dies at the end of the first one.
I know, but that's the thing. Well, people never stay dead in these stories.
he comes back for the sequel.
It's so unoriginal.
It's so unrealistic.
Yeah, it's Judas opens a portal and Christ knows what happens next. but yes, that's happening. I am reading currently. Mm-hmm. We got Little Drinking Game for Christmas. Sorry, Santa got Little Drinking Game for Christmas. The complete collection of the Mr. Men and Little Miss books.
Right.
Now, I loved these books when I was a kid. Apart from the, you know, patriarchy. Only read the Mr. Men, right?
Of course.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right? Am I right? Actually, I don't think Little Miss was quite as big a thing.
It wasn't.
When I was growing up.
Yeah.
Anyway, Roger Hargreaves, Mr. Men and Little Miss books. They're fucking weird.
Yeah.
They are so weird.
Mr. Tickle is cancelled.
A lot of them should be cancelled. There is, I read the most recent one, Little Miss Hug, the other day, in which, how can I say this? It appears that Little Miss Hug brings Mr. Grumpy to orgasm. And it's,
no.
You know, she hugs him and he goes, fuck off. At first, right? She her power is to, well, it's not power.
Salty language.
Her thing is to, honestly, when Roger Hargreaves passed on, they really went off the rails. She hugs people. So, and her arms can fit around anyone. So her arms can fit around Mr. Small or Mr. Greedy or
right.
Mr. Bump.
Okay.
And so she hears, and I'm no word of a lie, this is what happens. She's walking along one day, because a lot of the Mr. Men and Little Miss stories start with a detailed description of their breakfast, after which they go on a walk, and then the inciting incident happens. Mm. So if you were adapting these into a movie, that's what you would probably do. So the inciting incident of this is Little Miss Hug goes for a walk, and she hears, and I quote, groaning and grunting coming from behind a hedge. Now it's Mr. Grumpy.
It's Mr. Dogging.
It's Mr. Dogging. It's Mr. Grumpy. He's just grumpy about shit. And so she decides to give him a hug, unsolicited hug.
In the bush.
Now, HR mm-hmm. is going to have a word with Little Miss Hug, all right? Because
yes. Inappropriate workplace touching.
Mm-hmm. He repels her advances. So she tries again. I'm sorry, Little Miss Hug needs to be cancelled. This is absolutely outrageous behaviour. But then something strange happens. When she hugs Mr. Grumpy for the second time, he acquiesces to her advances. And in the text, it says, something happened to Mr. Grumpy that had never happened to him before. As she began to hug him, he felt a deep and warm sensation overcome him from within. And I was like, oh my God.
It's just like the Grinch's heart growing two sizes.
You say that.
Yeah.
Anyway, at Jacob Turner Art wants to know, just because I rewatched them both, what's the best, Portals or The Charge of the Rohirrim?
Oh.
It's Portals.
It is Portals. But like, because I don't feel like that's my favorite bit of Lord of the Rings is my basic thing.
Okay.
So that's why I'm torn on that
but
one.
Then like, it's in my
if it was Portals or Helm's Deep, now then we'd have a conversation.
Never go Helm's Deep.
Speak for yourself.
Alarming insight into your love making take the part of oh my word. Portals by
we
some
talk
distance.
About that.
Yeah, we should talk about Portals.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough of this tomfoolery. That's enough of this sanctioned buffoonery. If you want to have your question read out in the Empire podcast, Twitter is still incredibly standing after a couple of months of Elon Musk. It is still knocking around. And so get in touch with us. I'm at Chris Hewitt on there. Slide into my DMs if you must, or wait to reply to a panicked shout out every now and again. Today's was particularly panicked. I was on my way here and I was like, we don't have a question. So I risked my life while I was crossing a road to do this.
Wow.
I probably should have waited in fairness. Anyway, yes. Movie news. Shall we get straight into the movie news? What has been happening in the world of movie news?
History of the World Part 2. That's going to blow my mind. You've seen this, obviously, Mel Brooks' famous comedy from the insert year here, History of the World Part 1, always promised a sequel. And I remember renting History of the World Part 1 in the 1980s and looking for History of the World Part 2 because something's called Part 1, you assume there'll be a sequel. And I looked for it in vain because such a thing did not exist, except it's now going to exist because Mel Brooks is making a TV series of History of the World Part 2.
That's cool.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
That is wild. Tell us more about it, Jimbo.
I don't know anything more about it.
Great.
I do not know what eras it will cover. I do not know what the gags will be. I know absolutely nothing other than it is a thing that is happening.
It is a thing that exists.
It is a thing that will exist.
Yes.
And we will review it on the Pilot TV podcast.
Oh, if you could have a sequel to any Mel Brooks movie,
yes,
what would it be and why?
Spaceballs.
Really?
Yeah, because
really?
It was the first one I saw. It's the one I've seen most often.
I don't like space.
And I have an enormous amount of affection for it. I don't like
you don't care
if
fair
it's
enough.
Not good. I don't care. I have a lot of affection for Spaceballs.
Okay. Jimbo?
Blazing Saddles, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one, I have an affection for that film that I don't have for Spaceballs, which I did not find funny.
Any shouts for Young Frankenstein? It's Frankenstein!
None.
None.
But
none.
I feel like there's more to work with Spaceballs just because there's been so much more development in that sphere than there maybe has been in the Frankenstein sphere since Young Frankenstein. You know, like there's no mileage in making fun of the...
The Schwartz Awakens.
The Schwartz Awakens. See, already. Even James laughed.
Already we're laughing.
Humor.
That's a funnier joke than anything in Dracula the Dead.
It's definitely better than that. What do you call him when Harvey Dent did Frankenstein? I mean, it was I and Frankenstein. Was that I Frankenstein? You just remembered.
No, I just love you. Just call him Harvey Dent.
I had a moment. I couldn't remember his name.
Aaron Eckhart.
I was like, I was struggling. I could get the Aaron, and then I was like, it all went wrong. I was Taylor Johnson. No, I don't think so. Shit. Anyway, like I say, it's been a week. But yeah, like that has no cultural footprint, is what I'm saying. Whereas this,
like
the Star Wars, whereas the Star Wars sequels have a cultural footprint.
So if they released I, Frankenstein, The Way of Water, it would make $2 billion at the box office.
Well, interestingly enough, I wrote about that for The Guardian.
Yeah, I know you did, yes.
And and I think the cultural footprint thing is a really interesting thing. I also talked to Scott Mendelson, previously of Forbes, now of The Wrap, who wrote that first cultural footprint piece.
Yeah.
And he was saying, like, he really likes Avatar. It wasn't meant to be a stick to beat the film with. It was just a sort of observation made in 2014.
Right.
About the fact that you didn't see a lot of people in, you know, the costumes or the T-shirts or whatever,
but
which is true.
I was walking along a beach on Pandora. And I looked back.
Yeah.
I looked and I saw there was only one set of footprints.
Wow.
Only one set of cultural footprints in the sand.
Wow. Was that when James Cameron carried you?
James Cameron was carrying me the whole way.
That's incredible.
Thanks, the best JC.
My point is perhaps
what is happening?
A James Cameron fandom behaves differently from a Star Wars or a Marvel or a DC fandom. And it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It just means it's a different set of people.
Because clearly it does. I saw someone yesterday on Twitter going, off to see Avatar 2, a film nobody asked for. And it's just like, at this point, we have to accept that people have asked for this film. They just weren't vocal about it. It's about to break the $2 billion barrier at the box office. It may have
by
in the
time
last
you listen
five
to
minutes.
This.
By the time
yeah,
you listen
yeah.
to this, it's probably broken the $3 billion barrier. No, it's wild what this film is doing. And it's the little engine, it's a little $450 million engine that could. But it is crazy from a box office point of view what it's doing. I said on our Spoiler Special, which is up on our Spoiler Special subscription channel, that I think it's going to finish around the 3 mark. Mm-hmm. So not 3 billion, but around the third highest grossing
movie
of all
time.
Yeah, I think that's where we all are.
Around about 2.2 or 2.3. And then I thought, oh, if I over-egged the pudding here a little bit, and then it added on like another 100 million in a blink of an eye.
I have a question. That James Cameron, the Cameron derangement syndrome seems to be a thing that the people are bandying around. So he said this thing recently, you know, the quote about the screen sizes, right? So he said recently in one of the interviews, going to a movie theater is less about the size of the screen and the perfection of the sound system. It's more about the decision not to multitask. And for some reason, this enraged everyone on the internet.
Why?
I don't know. But there was this massive backlash about, you know, of course, screen size matters. But I was like, it is 100% what he said. Like, I believe that 100%. The thing about going to cinema is Twitter goes away, Instagram goes away, the person next to you goes away. You know, everything is just, it's just this.
Tell that to the person next to me who's on Twitter and Instagram.
Fair enough. I've actually been to an influencer screening of a film and I wanted to set fire to the room with them all in it. But they were just tweeting and Instagramming all the way through it. But
Awful people.
It was Transformers film though, so it didn't really matter. But genuinely, so that's it. And for someone like me who can't really focus very well, like, it's actually really, really useful to be forced to just exist in that space. So yeah,
Is one of the things that is precious about the cinema going experience. Yes. And of course, look, if you're not able to get to a cinema, you know, you can recreate that at home. It can be done. But the cinema does take away the barrier by just making it unacceptable to have your phone to be double screening at the time. I mean, and for people getting mad about that, which is just stupid, just get a life. Like, it's not like James Cameron has a history of saying screen size doesn't matter and sound quality doesn't matter. Quite the opposite. Mm. Like, we cannot say that he doesn't care about those things. That would be insane. So clearly he's making a wider point here, people, and let's just try and take a moment to think about maybe context.
If you get mad about what James Cameron says about cinemas, maybe you're projecting.
The worst.
Oh, you are the worst. Oh, my God.
Anything else?
That's the worst. You're right. Okay.
Helen is not
a fan. Who wants to see me fight a fucking snake?
You? Do I have to pay extra for this?
Yes, you do. Sign up to Pilot Plus.
I'm asking a lot of questions in this week's podcast, but what snake would you fight?
What snake? A grass snake. Definitely a grass snake.
You're such a grass. You're such a grass. But you know it's non-venomous. It. You know it's non-venomous.
Snitches get stitches, grass snake.
Yeah. Mm. Helen, what would you fight? Would you fight a venomous snake?
No.
I would fight a snake.
Elderly, toothless snake with no constricting ability.
All right. Okay.
Thought I'd make that clear. Didn't want you throwing a boa at me, you know.
Fair enough.
Okay. What else is happening in the world of movie news, apart from James Cameron making more money?
I'll be honest, there hasn't been a huge amount. So Channing Tatum has announced that he is working on a remake of Ghost, but they're going to do something different, that they're going to change its attitudes a little bit. What attitudes those in particular are, I'm not quite sure, but I imagine it's something to do with some of the things around the Whoopi Goldberg character of Oda Mae Brown and the way she's treated by the film and by, you know, the way she's portrayed, maybe, I don't know. But Channing Tatum in a Ghost remake. Look, I mean, he's got Magic Mike's Last Dance coming up.
He's
clearly catering. His last film was, I think, Dog, which was about him and a dog.
His directorial debut.
It was. And he clearly, frankly, knows what women want in a way that Gibbo has never shown much evidence of.
You gotta love Gibbo!
So I'm interested in this. I think it could be quite fun, silly.
Love Ghost. Is that cool to say? It's not cool to say.
It's not. It's never been.
It's good.
I don't think it was even cool in like 1990.
Oh, it was a good film.
It was a good film.
Pottery has never been so sexy.
I got it on VHS as a Christmas present, whatever year it came out.
Oh.
Yeah. I watched it quite a lot.
Was it because of the sexy bit with the pottery?
No. Yeah, Helen, you could get actual porn back then.
Wow, really? Oh, okay.
I'm sure. But I watched porn back then. No. Too young. Too young for porn. Too young for porn.
No porn for you. Right there. And guess what? There's no porn for you and there's no Highlander for the rest of us.
What?
It's not been cancelled. But we're saying, you know how obviously Chad Stahelski is making endless John Wick films, and that's a good thing. That's
good
not a
thing.
Bad thing.
Nobody's complaining about
that. But it does feel like Highlander gets further and further away. Well, he's announced another project. Presumably.
What's he up to?
I know. It's like, just do Highlander. There can be only one film you do next and it should be that one. But instead, he's doing the sequel to Four Reasons Without Remorse, the Michael B. Jordan film based on the Tom Clancy novels. And
I'm sorry, are you just making this up?
No, I'm absolutely not.
It's
absolutely happening. And it's based on the book Rainbow Six, which spawned the very successful series of games based on the book Rainbow Six.
I've played 10 minutes of that.
Well done. This will be an adaptation of the book Rainbow Six and not the games Rainbow Six. And Michael B. Jordan will be reprising the role of his character, who is Action Guy.
Was he John Clark?
John Clark.
Sure, why not?
Well, of course, I think you'll find his name actually isn't John Clark.
No,
John Clark is a nom de plume.
Or nom de guerre.
Nom de guerre.
And yes, a nom de guerre, of course, de guerre.
If you will.
Yes,
Parabellum, of course, meaning prepare for war.
What does?
Parabellum. As in John Wick 3 parallel.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. So maybe he was dropping clues all along.
Yeah, that's it. It's all been the lead up to this.
I don't see this happening. I'm gonna stick my colours to the mast.
You're
right
saying
now.
Tom Clancy's Rainbow sucks.
Wow.
No, I don't say that. I don't say that at all.
But Without Remorse didn't.
We watched that during lockdown, didn't we? That was one of our lockdown reviews.
It was fine.
We did a spoiler special for that.
I think we did.
I have
you
no
know
recollection.
I think that was the time when we were really starved for big, stupid action movies.
And like, it was one.
There were no big, stupid action movies. Yeah. And I think, I don't know what we said about it at the time, but that definitely swayed our opinion on it.
Yeah. It's got some good stuff going on.
A lot of it made sense.
No, it surprises me.
It has no cultural footprint.
No, it does not.
That's why I'm surprised they would make a sequel.
It surprises me that Michael B. Jordan is keen to reprise this role, to be honest with you.
I watched two episodes of the new series of Jack Ryan.
Did you? It's good. It's good.
I haven't finished it
yet. Guess where we reviewed it, Helen?
Oh, I don't want to know.
I hope you reviewed it, Dana fucking well.
No, I will say, so Jack Ryan season one, did you watch season one?
Yeah, right,
it was really good.
Sure, yeah.
Season two was not good.
No, it was
It was really boring. I feel three regained some of that old
It certainly seems
fire.
Timely in its villains.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
If there's a property that involves John Krasinski running around with a beard, wearing a Henley, like, I'm probably there. I'm a simple woman. I don't demand
Does he
much.
Have a beard in this? I don't think he does.
I think he does.
I'm fairly certain he's beardless.
He's bearded. At
I'm pretty sure
point.
He's bearded.
I'm sure I've seen a picture of John.
Yeah, he may shave at some point. I've only two episodes in.
Then spoiler, he may shave.
Equally, if Michael B. Jordan wants to run around also in a Henley,
with or without
shooting
a
gun, again, I'm open to that. Yeah. I am a simple woman. I don't demand much.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, there's not a lot of news out there. I wonder if something's going to happen over the next 24 to 48 hours, a big bit of casting news or a big trailer or something like that will force us to get back into the remote virtual pod booth to talk about it. But having said that, we've been generating a lot of news ourselves over the last few days because tomorrow as we record this is New Empire Day.
Woo!
It is the brand new issue of Empire Magazine. It is hitting the stands of all good, evil and virtual news agents wherever you are, and on the cover, and we talked about this last week, but on the cover is Kang. Sorry, I dropped the name there. It is Kang. That's right, my old mucker, Kang. And Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. It is Sonny Birch less, but nevertheless, Peyton Reed has stepped up to the plate and introduced Marvel's new big bad, played by Jonathan Majors, in the forthcoming Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and I spoke to pretty much everybody for that. So that is our cover story. Very, very exciting indeed. And so we've got lots of stuff in there, lots of really, really cool tidbits, but we've been generating lots of news by talking to lots of cool people. What else has been in the issue, folks?
We've got the first look at Adam Warlock, or the first good look at Adam Warlock, and a little bit more about him. We've got the future of Avatar from John Landau.
That's right. But that's an interview with James Gunn as well, where he talks about that. And yeah, John Landau, as you say.
We have Hugh Jackman on Deadpool 3. We have Lockwood & Co., the new Joe Cornish series.
Guess what we're reviewing on the next Pilot TV podcast, Helen? Lockwood
& Co.
How much can I pay to stop?
Okay.
Yeah.
we can work something out after the show.
We also really interesting have a piece on Pearl, the film from Ty West and Mia Goth, Full Up to X. And of course, you know, all of the Quantumania, Quantum Madness.
Quantumania, Quantum Madness.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
We also have given Amon Woman the chance to finally expunge himself of all of his Mask of the Phantasm chat by doing a Batman Mask of the Phantasm feature in the magazine.
Yeah. Well, and it's a tribute, I think. It's a tribute, isn't it, to the late, great Kevin Conroy
it
as
is.
Well. So, yeah. And then we also have a piece on The Shining. We also have a piece on Jim Carrey. And of course, Chris's section, which is my personal favorite.
The best section.
I read it once. It was good.
It's okay. But yes, in that, we talked to Ryan Johnson. I talked to Ryan Johnson about Glass Onion and Knives Out Mystery. Among the things we talked about was How Glass Onion and Knives Out Mystery is a terrible title, and he wishes that wasn't a title. But that is a different interview from the Spoiler Special interview I did with Ryan Johnson, which you can hear in right now if you are a Spoiler Special subscriber. But that's a really fun piece. We have David Bruckner on creating a new Pinhead in the most recent Hellraiser, which came out just before Christmas. And there's a ton of other great stuff as well inside the issue. It's a cracking issue, folks. It is an absolute cracking issue. Apologies for writing some of it, but hopefully you can get past that and enjoy yourselves nonetheless. And it's available right now. All good, evil, or virtual newsagents. What a time to be alive.
Hurrah.
Couple of last tidbits to finish off. So Thunderbolts, Marvel Studios Thunderbolts, which is a movie that is absolutely 100% happening, has set a production start date, as revealed by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who will return as the beloved Fal. Hopefully this will be the movie that actually turns us round on that character.
She is
amazing.
She's an incredible star. Yeah.
So fingers crossed, Thunderbolts is going to start filming in June, she said.
June!
It's not film news, but can we talk about the fact that Meryl Streep has joined season 3 of Only Murders in the Building? Oh, I'm so excited.
A show that I can't get on board with.
Why?
But, you know.
They live in amazing apartments, wear fantastic outerwear, and are really funny while solving mysteries. What's not to love?
It's all me. It's me.
It's you.
It's definitely me.
How do you explain me?
Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me.
I loved the first season, and I stopped watching season 2 after 2 episodes.
See, I heard, so as I recall, I mean, I don't listen to everything Boyd says on the podcast. Sorry, Boyd, I know you're listening to this. But I seem to recall he started out not loving season 2, but then by the end of it really liked it, I think. I could have it the other way around.
I don't have the time to resist with things I don't enjoy.
Fair enough.
I mean, even if I'm told that it'll come good in the end. Andor.
Your unwillingness to watch Andor makes me want to, like, shoot you with a Death Star. It's very upsetting. You are the most maddening.
I am the most maddening.
Yeah, it's ironic.
It's like looking in a mirror, only not. But yeah, Meryl Streep, Paul Rudd, they're going to be in Only Murders in the Building season 3. And enough people have called me an idiot on social media for me to maybe consider giving Only Murders in the Building Once I've seen Andor.
Correct.
But again, and I'm not kidding, I still haven't finished the recent series of MasterChef The Professionals.
I don't care.
I need to finish that.
No, you don't. It's not like the plot won't make sense in the next season if you haven't finished
also,
this one.
I'm going to watch your little mushroom show.
Oh, The Last of Us. Are you? Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
there are mushrooms in it.
TV shows. Well, if you watch a few more, Chris, we might have you on the Pilot TV podcast. Talk about them.
Oh wow, please. And the last thing is the Mandalorian season 3 trailer.
Oh, yay.
I haven't seen it.
Nor have I. I thought you might have done.
No, I didn't even know it dropped.
What were you doing with your life?
I saw there was a poster. Should we all take a minute and watch it?
Good Lord.
All right, let's find it.
1 minute and 51 seconds later.
Well.
We've just watched it.
It's good, isn't it?
This is the way.
I have questions. So it is to The Mandalorian what Aliens is to Alien. This is Mandalorians. This time it's war.
It's been like that since...
A little bit, yeah. But it's interesting because obviously, as we have established, he's part of a group of zealous fanatics and he has broken the creed. Mm. So now, instead of learning and moving on from the cult, he's doubling down and going back into the cult.
But maybe he won't. Do you know what I mean? Like, because he's also made contact with the, like, sensibler Mandalorian.
Yes, he has.
So he could go either way, I feel like.
Yeah. And, you know, and they give him grief, literally, as we see in this. Grief Karga, obviously, making an appearance.
Oh.
Yes, very good. And Grogu gets to chuck things around with the Force, which is exciting.
Yeah. And we also have little giggling things, which will
make
Babu
you very
freaks.
Happy. Babu freaks. Do you know what? This all makes sense because Ben, I try very hard to not listen to the office WhatsApp chat because it annoys me. But Ben was going off about Babu Freak this week, and I couldn't work out why, and now I understand why.
Hey!
That was a bit Krusty the Clown, actually.
And also, what do you call him from Jabba's Court? We giggling.
Salacious Crumb. Go on,
yeah, who, if I remember, you guys put higher on the list of Star Wars greatest characters than, like, Ren.
That's fair.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And your problem is...
Yeah.
that maybe you're swayed by what children's toys you had growing up and not actually by the quality of the performance or depth of the character?
I think you find Salacious Crumb isn't a Mary Sue, Helen.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
You couldn't get Salacious Crumb on his own as a toy. You could only get him as part of the Jabba the Hutt playset.
Yeah, but surely that didn't affect you. You had all of the toys.
I didn't have the Jabba the Hutt playset.
I had a Salacious Crumb and I didn't have the Jabba the Hutt playset.
Oh. Well, this has been
fun. Do you think I've just made this up and actually this is entirely untrue and you could 100% buy Salacious Crumb as a figure?
This is something you were told by your mum.
Yeah, it might be. I said, Mum, can I have Salacious Crumb? I'm afraid, James, it's only available as part of the Jabba the Hutt playset and you can't have it.
I'm afraid this Salacious Crumb figure will become
you
operational
want this?
When your friends arrive.
Good God.
Strike me down with all of your anger.
Take this Salacious Crumb figure's place by my side. Looking forward to Mandalorian season 3.
Yeah, looks good.
There
I mean,
go.
I was good. Looking forward to it.
Bum, bum. I'm gonna. Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to us to getting back to the old spoilerizing. So Mando spoiler specials.
Yeah, we have yet to figure out whether we're doing weekly episodes or whether we're doing the thing that seemed to work well for Andor. Before I got bored and walked off, and
unbelievable.
Funny kid, I just didn't have time.
You are the
I didn't
worst.
Have time.
You are the actual worst.
Or She-Hulk. Or indeed House of the Thrones and
Dragons.
Game of the Rings.
We did
episodes at the beginning, episodes at the end, and then we did a middle bit.
Did you finish any of those? You finished She-Hulk, didn't you?
I finished She-Hulk.
Yeah.
And I finished Lord of the Thrones.
Did
because
you?
I was on stage doing a live
that's
special.
Right. Okay. But did you watch the ones in between the first one and the last episode?
No comment.
Oh, unbelievable.
I do not wish to implicate myself in any criminal conspiracies.
Fair.
It's a Ponzi scheme. Anyway, let's have a guest.
Let's do it.
Let's have a guests.
Let's have two guests.
Let's have two guests.
Are they both Noah Baumbach?
Let's have punky guests.
It's Noah Baumbach. And Noah Baumbach. Oh, that'd be amazing. No, it is next week sees the release of one of the most anticipated films of the year so far, a film that is a surefire contender for the Oscar race.
Dune!
It is not The Fabelmans. It is Plane. It is Gerard Butler and Mike Coulter starring in Plane.
You know they've greenlit a sequel. Train and a threequel. Automobile.
Did you write that down before you came in?
Didn't I make that joke the other week?
Did you?
I think you did, yeah.
It's pretty first place.
Welcome to the patriarchy.
Ding, 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 ding.
A woman has made a joke I like.
I will
file this away for future use.
I thought I'd come up with that all by myself. Oh, that's really disappointing.
Fairness, it's not.
It's not pushing the boat out. Boat. That could be the fourth one.
Oh boat. Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry.
Plane stars Gerard Butler as a pilot man called Brody Torrance. That's his actual name. This is the pilot plus that we need in our lives. Not this tawdry subscription thing that this man is doing. This
OnlyFans, yes.
This man here. We need this. This is the pilot plus that we all need. Gerard Butler is pilot man who flies a plane, and on that plane is a notorious killer man played by Mike Coulter.
And oh no!
Would you know, the plane goes down.
Oh no!
The plane goes down, and it goes down in a war-torn land, and before you can say, local militia, they are set upon by a local militia, and their lives are in danger. And Pilot Man must team up.
Am I Pilot Man?
Killer Man. No, you're not Pilot Man. you're barely Steward Man. They team up to take down militia. Do they do it? I'm not going to give anything away.
Do we learn some things about Bad Man?
We
turns out to be not quite so bad after all.
Helen, in this interview that I did with Gerard Butler, who is a regular on the podcast, but hasn't been on the podcast for a couple of years now, and is always a delight to talk to Jerry on the podcast. He's great fun. And Mike Coulter, who was the
lovely
last
man,
on the podcast in a live show we did a few years ago. Great guy, great actors both. On this, and I feel I have to warn the listeners at home, it's possible I overshared. Now, let me just put this in context, and this might explain the Northampton Services reference at the beginning of the podcast. The other week, myself, Mrs. Drinking Game and Little Drinking Game, we're going to Liverpool to see a game, and we, well, only I saw a game, if it could be called that. And then we were driving back from Liverpool to London to get to home to do Jerry Butler and Mike Coulter because they were on Zoom.
Right.
And we hired an electric car, and turns out that was probably a mistake, although you're welcome, planet Earth. But it was also a mistake because we had to keep charging it, and it meant the journey, which usually takes 5-6 hours with a couple of rest stops, was in the region of 8 hours.
Wow.
And so there was a point where we were really, really racing home in order to be on time to A, return the car without getting fined, and B, to arrive in time for the interview with Jerry Butler and Mike Coulter.
Sure.
Now, disastrously.
No.
Disastrously,
oh.
Helen, I was overcome by what scientists have since called the shits.
Oh, no.
Around, and I'm sorry, folks.
Overshare.
I may be oversharing.
Overshare.
This may be oversharing,
maybe.
But I think over the years, listeners, and these two people that I'm contractually bound to call my friends, I feel like, you know, I was struck down outside Northampton services. I had to pull in. I had to make an emergency stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to race back to London like a bat out of hell.
Right.
Luckily, Jerry and Mike were an hour and a half late, so it really helped, and I managed to they were overrunning spectacularly, and that helped, and therefore we did the interview. Now, in the spirit of oversharing, shared this with Jared Butler and Mike Coulter at the beginning of the interview. So there's quite a lot of talk about Northampton services and pooing that runs throughout this interview. It's a running gag, if you will.
Oh no.
With the emphasis heavily on the running.
Mm.
So with that in mind, what I would say as well, it's a really fun interview, and there's bits where we don't talk about my poop. Here's Jerry Butler and Mike Coulter. Enjoy.
This is toilet.
Imagine living with Jerry Butler. This is fridge. That's good, Jerry. Well done. This is toast. Just eat it, Jerry, for the love of God. I'll give you guys a big introduction and away we will go. We are delighted to be joined on the Emperor Podcast.
We
haven't started. Jerry, Jesus Christ. Honestly.
Because I think that's usable, what we just
He's
did.
He's recording
that's
it all.
That's
it. Recording it all.
Oh, my God. All right. Okay. Game faces. We are delighted to be joined on the Emperor Podcast by the stars of playing Jared Butler and Mike Coulter. How are you both?
Well, thank you.
I'm good. I'm okay.
What does that mean? What does that imply? Mike, are you not okay?
I'm just not as okay as he is, okay? He's really okay. I'm just okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't have to say anymore. I'm okay.
Just take it as read. I know exactly what you mean.
Ambiguity.
Well, I am very glad to be talking to you because it's very late over here for a start in London. But that's okay. That's okay. But the reason I'm very glad to be talking to you guys is that I nearly didn't make it. I was driving back from Liverpool. I was in Liverpool last night for the football game. I drove back, race against time, bat out of hell to try and get here. I was waylaid at Northampton services by an apocalyptic poo. Now, guys, I prevailed. I pushed through and I got here and I did it for you guys. So...
You held it.
I took a shit at Northampton services, but I did it.
Okay.
I did it for you guys.
The way you said you pushed through
because I was
perfect term to say you pushed through and then you got back on the road.
Nice.
Yeah, but it was a rental car, so I decided not to. It was to pull
over. Wait a minute, you took a shit in the car?
Take a shit in the car. Okay, listen, can we just...
Why are you talking about a rental car then? What
can
is
we
the
just
matter?
Nip this in the bud, first of all? I did not take a shit in a car.
Allegedly.
But it nearly stopped me from being late to talk to you guys. I just wanted to let you know that just up front.
Appreciate that.
It was a Gerard Butler-esque race against time, I thought. And it made me think... When was the last time both of you raced against time?
What if you had to pull over and do a massive
simultaneously,
and you were almost late for filming?
Yeah.
That wasn't quite where I was going, but if you want to go there, Jerry, you can go there. It's fine. You can go there if you want to go there. When was the last time both of you raced against time, and was there a happy outcome in real life?
I'm not going to lie, because let me tell you something. I could create some scenario, but I've reached a time in my life where I try not to race, because what happens is things can happen. You know, I tell people sometimes I don't want to be late, but I don't want to die to get somewhere. So sometimes you just have to just take it easy. I mean, being late is bad. Being dead is worse. So I kind of sort of just like, you know, I try to just, you know, I move with a sense of urgency, but I try not to race against time to get anywhere.
I love cortisol and adrenaline. Mm. It's a very subconscious addiction. So I find myself finding reasons to be late. And then in the car on the way to the airport, or even on the way here this morning, going, why didn't you leave 10 minutes earlier? Mm. With my stomach churning, hating myself, but I know I'm alive, right? It's full of emotion and feeling. So I literally had a race against time this morning.
Well,
even at lunchtime, it was time to come back. And I thought, I'll take a lie down.
Yeah.
And I knew I'd gone past the point of return. And then I ended up getting, you know, running out, going, oh, God damn it, get in the elevator, let's go and get ready. So that's how I live. It's so not mature.
No, you can't do it. But plane, and...
We made that movie.
You made that movie. Right. There's a movie plane here. Behind you guys. It's incredible.
By the way, look at this. What a cool photo is that.
That's cool.
That is cool. That is very cool.
No, awesome.
That is the actual plane from the movie Plane. I can identify planes. I'm a plane spotter. But this,
I know it's a plane.
It's definitely a plane. I can confirm it's a plane. This movie and Greenland are proof positive that you should never get on an aircraft with Gerard Butler. But is that the case in real life? Jerry, are you a good passenger? Are you a good flyer?
I'm a good flyer. You know, I've flown a lot. I've had a couple of hairy moments. I had more hairy moments when I was learning to fly a helicopter. I literally had a couple of pretty awful moments there. But as a regular flyer, no, I think I'm pretty good.
According to Jerry, he likes to take his hat and pull it down just so, then pull out all of his crap.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Just spread it all over the seat and on the floor. And then when they come to tell him to put it on the overhead compartment, he gives them a look. He's like, do you know who I am? And then they go, sorry, sir. And then they go back to the front and then he delays the entire flight. That's what he told me. I'm just telling you what he told me. I mean, I don't know if you call that a good flyer or not, but they, you know.
I feel completely betrayed right now.
I'm sorry. This is on camera for somebody else. I don't know why he's pretending this.
Yeah. And then if they don't know who I am, I throw a tantrum and go up and say, I'll fly this damn plane. Yeah. I'll show you who I am. I am Captain Brody Torrance.
This is before they saw the movie. He's been doing this the last year now.
By the way, I do pull out a bunch of stuff because suddenly I'm like, am I going to write notes? Am I going to read one of these five books? Am I going to go on my iPad? Am I going to use my headphones? Yeah. And I take it all out and it's a mess.
And the poor person sitting next to him has no room for their stuff.
And it's all about me. It is annoying. And then often because I put so much stuff out, I leave and then... just when it's too late to turn back, I go, I left my bloody iPad. I put it under the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
A dozen iPads later, you've never learned.
I've lost so many iPads on planes.
I've lost, you know, two.
I've lost over 150.
Over 150, yeah.
That sounds good.
Mike, what about yourself? Are you a model passenger?
I think I'm the best passenger. I pride myself on being a great passenger.
Oh my God, listen to this.
Yeah, I pride myself on being a great passenger. And it's nice because when I get on a plane, like I fly a lot. I have my routine. I normally don't eat on the plane. I try not to because I get tired of food. I'm like, you know, I bring my own food sometimes. Wow. And I have my water bottle. I have my routine.
Wow.
The flight attendants, they love me. They always give me a little, like the other day they gave me a couple of bottles of wine. I'm like, I don't need wine. I don't even drink them. I'll take it though. Fine. I'll take it. I'm not going to tell you who did that. But point is, I am a model passenger of a plane. So now after this movie comes out, I hope people don't look at me when I get on the plane and start like looking like concerned. You know what I mean? Like this have like a flashback or they're triggered, but I'm a pretty good passenger.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm getting to the stage that now I don't think people want to be anywhere with me because pretty much everywhere I've been, it's turned to shit. So it's funny. Somebody asked me the other day, what would you do if you weren't making, if you gave up acting? And I thought I would be I would actually love to go and work in like a national park or something and really be out in nature. But then I imagine people seeing me going, oh, there's Jerry Butler. Oh, there's going to be a forest fire. There's going to be a tsunami on this lake. Something is going to go down. And I often get that people go, oh, as they recognize me and go, actually, I'm getting the hell out of here. Yeah. I don't want to be around this guy.
Yeah. People at the beach packing up. That's Jerry Butler. Back up.
There's been a lot of debate online. I don't know whether you guys have seen this, about the title of this movie just being Plane, which is just a very declarative title, Plane.
It's a very plain title.
Plane.
would Things Are About to Turn to Shit When Jerry Butler Appears have been a better title, or or is that something you might consider for the next one, Jerry?
That's the whole point, is it felt like anything else would be over-describing. Flight was a great movie. Earthquake, Speed, Airplane, Airport, Twister,
Batman.
There's a lot of great movies with simple titles. It was actually one that it was the original title. Then when we were filming, it became The Plane. Don't know why. And then we argued to bring it back to Plane. But there was a lot of conversation about changing it. But to be honest, I feel this allows you to think more into it. Allows the audience to go in and have their own judgments and feelings about it. And this is kind of the main character of the movie in a way. It's not all set on a plane, but it's very plane-centric.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, it doesn't all take place on the plane. So were you worried about misleading audiences with that title? We went Plane, but then Ground. Would have been a title for the movie.
Surprise them then.
Misleading is good. I think misleading is always good with the audience. With a trailer, with a description, you don't want to give them too much. And if they come there looking to be on a plane the entire time, then, it's not a complete lie. I mean, you're on a plane.
But you're right. I mean, we could try and put in there Plane and Rebel-Held Island.
Yeah.
Remote Island.
Plane
and Jolo Island.
Plane and Ground and Plane.
Have you considered, and go with me in this one, have you considered Avatar:Plane? And then people will think it's an Avatar movie.
Oh my God. Yeah. Some people actually might go and see it then. I know. That's actually a very good idea.
I know. stick that in there. Superhero on plane.
Avengers Plane, I think, is a good way to go with this one as well. But Jerry, you mentioned there that your character is called Brody Torrance, which may be the most Scottish name in the history of movies. It does, and Mike, obviously you're Louis Gaspar, which is not Scottish. What's in a name for you guys? Does a name help both of you get into the character? Does it clue you in to the character?
Yeah, I think it does. I think Brody Torrance has a certain kind of sincerity and strength to it, and as you say, a Scottishness. So and what that playing this Scottish, I think, really suited who this guy was. He is strong, he is quite an alpha male, but at the same time there is a sincerity and an honesty and a kind of loyalty. And I feel like Scots in the past, they've always been kind of known for that. If they weren't playing the criminals, but they'd often be they'd be great doctors or lawyers, and they're known for that as a people, I feel, So I think Brody Torrance worked well in kind of coloring him that way. But also, it's just a fun name, Brody Torrance. So I felt a definite affection towards that, and the more it kind of stands out, the more you can kind of envelop yourself and really feel that rather than John Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, what about you? I mean, playing someone like Luke Cage, I mean, that tells you a lot about the character right from the off with that name. Same thing here for you?
Yeah, Luis Gaspar, JF, the director, being Parisian French, we talked about it, and obviously I was wondering how French was this guy. We talked about it when we were just having a conversation about the script prior to signing on. It was... For them, it wasn't important that, it was like, it wasn't about so much, because the story, as you probably remember, is like this guy went to the Foreign Legion, French Foreign Legion, which is a place you can actually hide. You can sort of take on another persona, and for all I know, that's not even his real name. I don't even know. There's a mystery to it. Like, you go into this French Foreign Legion. If you do that, you're basically willing to risk your life in this regime, and no, they don't care what you did before you got there. So your past is your past, and who you say you are is who you say you are, and whatever that means, it doesn't matter, because now you're in this thing where it's like you're a blood pact, you're brothers in arms, and so you're in the military and you learn these certain things, but the life you had before, that's gone. So when Luis Gaspar is almost like it's mysterious. Is that really who he is? But because he went into there to hide. So it's interesting about that. So I like the name. I just don't know if that's his real name. So that's a good question.
All right. Well, I know I've got to let you guys go in a second, but I just want to say you're both incredibly busy. Jerry, you're doing more Greenland, which I'm very excited about. I love the first Greenland. You know, more Mike Banning on the way, potentially. Mike, you're doing more Evil as we speak right now. Well, not obviously as we speak, but perhaps after this.
Yeah,
but
pretty much as we speak, literally.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
But can I interest you both in a movie about a heroic journalist on his way to interview two actors who Lynn has to pull off at Northampton Services for a poo?
Pinch. I think we could do that if we could change the title from that long thing you just said. I think, you know.
No, by the way, let's just call it what it is.
The poop.
Poop.
The poop. No, not the poop. Just poop.
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 Yeah,
okay.
There's no there. We took the there out of this. Poop. Poop.
How about Avatar poop and then I'm in?
Avatar poop.
You're right.
Okay.
We're going to make some money on that.
Brilliant. Jerry, Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks very much indeed.
Good to see you.
All right.
Likewise. Cheers. Okay, so that was Jerry Butler and Mike Coulter, and we will be reviewing Plane on next week's episode. What would you give that story? Do you think that they should become the next Jerry Butler film? Heroic journalist racing home to do an interview, but he has to go to the toilet.
No, it's a little derivative of your great unmade film, Touching Cloth.
Mm. Someone suggested Jerry Butler could play, because I overshared and put this on Twitter. Someone said that Jerry Butler, you know, because when Pete Postlethwaite died.
Yeah.
Touching Cloth and its five sequels died with him. But Jerry Butler could play Lightning Rod Halliwell, is all I'm going to say. I think he could just about do it.
Right. Well, if you ever write the script, then I guess we can send it to him and see what he thinks.
Touching Cloth 2, Trouble at Turtlehead Bay, and Touching Cloth 3, Max Relief, are written. Technically not, but very much close to, and it won't take that long.
No, it probably won't.
A film that maybe Helen thinks didn't take that long to write is Damien Chazelle's Babylon, which is based on David Gray's hit single from his... No? Okay.
I wish.
Damien Chazelle is, of course, the wunderkind who made Whiplash, which I watched again the other day. My God, that film's amazing. La La Land. Oh, amazing. Helen agrees. Yeah. And First Man, which was also a film that was made by Damien Chazelle. And he's back with Babylon, which is...
Flames on the side of my face.
Why do you not like this one, Helen? Because the critics have been torn on this. Like, snakes. They're brilliant.
Why'd it have to be snakes?
It just... Okay, compared to this, genuinely, my feelings for La La Land are like warm and fuzzy.
This makes La La Land look like Whiplash.
And this is not another day of sun?
It is very much... I mean, look, there's a lot of sunshine in it, in that it's hot and large scenes take place out in the desert. I just... It starts with elephant diarrhea.
As all good films do.
And goes downhill from there.
Well, but the elephant should have just gone to Northampton Services like everyone else.
Absolutely. He is on the road at the time, if that helps. But it really does. And like, you know, I don't mind scatological humor necessarily. Like, I have watched all the Jackass movies and enjoy them. Jackass Forever, I think, was one of my top 10 films of last year.
Rightly so.
Absolutely. It's a fucking masterwork. But the Jackass films, like, are clever and considered, actually, and funny. And this is trying to be all of those things. And for my money, mostly failing. There are nuggets of gold here, tiny little nuggets of gold, but they are literally buried in bull elephant shit.
Oh, wow.
I cannot... It is 3 hours and 10 minutes. So every time something happened, I was like, Jesus
this
Christ,
review
there's
or
still
the film?
40 minutes to go. Either. Pick one. I swear to God. So basically, okay, let's start.
That's rewind.
Rewind. It's 1926. It's Hollywood. Diego Calva plays Manny, who is he wants to be something. He wants to be involved in the movies. He's helping out a big producer. He's helping him throw an orgy because, you know, he's hoping to just make himself useful, get his foot in the door, get going. big orgy party happens. Lots of things. That's why the elephant is headed up the hill to the big orgy house.
What the fuck?
They just want there to be an elephant there. I don't believe anyone fucks the elephant, but honestly, who knows off screen. We meet most of the characters who come and go through this film. So Margot Robbie is a wannabe star. She's Nellie Leroy. She turns up at this party without an invitation. Manny helps her get in the door. They do an enormous amount of cocaine together. He mansplains cinema and its attractions to her, because that's what happens in Damien Chazelle films. When a woman wants to be a movie star, a man has to explain to her why movies matter. And so they both get set on a new course as a result of going to this party. Brad Pitt's actual movie star, meanwhile, is getting dumped by his wife, Olivia Wilde, who we never see again. She sensibly gets out after one very brief scene.
Don't worry, darling.
There's a lot of very good, tiny cameos in this film. I will give it that. But
at
again, 3 hours and 10 minutes. Anyway, so we meet Brad Pitt's movie star character. He's been a star for a long time. You know, he's worried that his stardom will wane. You also have Lee Jun Lee as a sort of anime Wong type. She's fabulous, but doesn't get a lot to do. You also have Giovanna Depo as an incredible jazz musician who's fabulous. He doesn't get a lot to do. And it just goes on from there. And it's weird because I'm sure he's done his research. I'm sure it's based on things. But to me, this Hollywood of 1926 looked much more like Hollywood of 1916. It was so loose and so chaotic. And there are literal multiple deaths while making movies. And it's laughed off as a joke, and it's treated as a throwaway gag. And it's weird. It's really weird. And it's trying to say something about the nature of movie making. It's trying to say something about we all go through this crazy shit and many people get chewed out and spat out by the system, but we still love the art form in a way that's, it should make sense, but it doesn't. It just ends up feeling like almost an apologia for everything that Hollywood's done wrong. And I don't accept that, and I don't like it, but I also wasn't entertained by it. I wasn't amused by it. I didn't feel like it was fresh or clever. Just having a lot of scatological jokes and swearing in a film about olden days Hollywood doesn't actually make it feel fresh. It just felt tedious as fuck.
True or false, though, Margot Robbie fights a snake.
She does fight a snake. Yes. Yes. There's a bit with a snake. I mean, to call it a fight seems a little unfair, if I'm honest. I really, really hate it. It ruined my entire day and really entire week.
I know this because I met up with you just after you'd seen it, and you had the sort of hollow, dead-eyed stare of someone who's seen something she can never unsee. Like, a bit like all the characters in Event Horizon.
Well, honestly, I mean, it's not far off that. You know, I feel like it's just going too far in all directions to make any kind of coherent point. And even when there are moments and characters who are good, like I actually thought Brad Pitt's character was really interesting and there was an idea there. It's kind of the wrong time frame for that guy. But okay, it kind of works and he kind of made sense to me. And then the film screwed that up as well. I just, oh.
Yes, but Helen, what didn't you like about it?
I'm so angry at it.
So what you're saying is, if it's a choice between this or Babylon AD, watch the Vin Diesel film.
Yeah, I probably would.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, great score. I didn't hate how it was shot. Like I say, a lot of the cast are good. I mean, Margot Robbie's good. I just hated her character. I thought her character was a nothing and just a throwaway. It's the same thing he did with La La Land, where Emma Stone gives that character... Emma Stone gives that character everything she has. And in this case, Margot Robbie gives that character everything she has, and there is nothing else there.
They famously improvised all her lines.
No, but like this is what I'm saying. There's nothing else. There's no real there. The only there that's brought to that is by them. It's not by the script. The script is... I hate it, Chris. I'm sorry.
It doesn't come across. Five stars then. What did we give this?
We gave it three.
I was going to say, because everyone's either given this five or one. There's no way we could sit in the fence and give this thing a three stars, but we have three stars then for Damien Chazelle's Babylon. If you like that, just wait for White Ladder. Sounds to me like he should be asking, please forgive me. Yeah. Am I right?
David Gray man.
I'm running out of David Gray songs. Quick, yeah. Help me.
Somehow.
Three stars then for Babylon. Helen's review may or may not have made you want to see it more.
It may have done, and in which case, you know, go with God.
Yeah, 3 hours and 10 minutes. But isn't it good when a director swings for the fences? There was a much derided piece in Variety this week about, mainly because Oren Kleberman, great critic, obviously, but he was saying that, you know, every great director has to make a misfire like this. And then he got lambasted because of some of the choices of films that he chose as misfires, including David Lynch's Wild at Heart, which isn't a misfire and won the fucking Palme d'Or. But hey ho, some of them were obviously, you know, Heaven's Gate and, you know, One from the Heart and things like that.
Sure.
You know, but do you agree with that? Do you agree that every great director has to overreach once in order to achieve greatness?
I'm obviously not convinced he's a great director. With the greatest respect, I'm not. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I think Whiplash is a very good film. I'm not as hyped on it as other people are, but maybe I need to watch it again. The First Man I thought was fine. But I do appreciate cinema that swings for the fences, but I also appreciate cinema that knows what it wants to say. And this didn't feel like it knew what it wanted to say. And it didn't feel coherent and it didn't feel considered. And it just felt jeering and kind of nasty and sort of disrespectful. And so that, I think, is where it lost me, really. And look, I can see these going for comedy, but I was so annoyed about everything else that even the comedy wasn't hitting for me. So, like I say, it's not that there's nothing good in this. It's just that the bad bits turned me off so much that I was almost begrudging the good bits and the good people and the good performances and the good moments. Because it genuinely was like I was fucking Laura Dern and I was sticking my arm into that big pile of elephant shit. Well, obviously dinosaur shit in that case. You know what I mean. Looking for nuggets of seeds or something that was good.
Exactly what she was doing.
Yeah, she was looking for evidence of what the elephants the dinosaurs have been eating. Mm. But it really felt like you were just trudging through something looking for the good bits, and it is so much bad shit around it.
Helen wants something more considered, which brings us neatly on to Alice, darling. James Honey, can you review this, please?
I was trying desperately to psych myself up for a melch it there, and I was just like, I'm going to go for it. I'm gonna go. And then I was like, no, I got cold feet. I was like, I'm not going to, darling. Yes, no, I can't give good melch it. Sorry. but anyway, so this is the film that Helen followed Babylon with, and Helen and I watched this one together. I wasn't sure what to expect from this. I didn't really know an awful lot about it sort of going in, but this one is directed by Mary Nighy, written by Alana Francis, and this film is about Alice, obviously, from the title, played by Anna Kendrick, who is in a relationship with Simon, and Simon is an arse. And we see quite early on that, you know, he's not overtly abusive or nasty, sort of microaggressions you pick up on quite early on, but you do get the impression that she has been alienated from her two best friends, Tess and Sophie. And there's a sense that she's very nervous around. She has this habit, and it's really upsetting in the film, of pulling out her own hair. Like, she has real anxiety behavior. And essentially, the plot of the film is that she has been asked to go away with Tess and Sophie for Tess's birthday. They're going to spend a week in a cabin just chilling out as girls, you know, rekindling their friendship, which is kind of drifted apart a little bit, because as all coercive, controlling men, he has kind of alienated her from the people around her, from her support network, and sort of made him her entire world. So she lies to him about where she's going, and she goes away for this week. And so it's a very sort of almost subtle rendering of what an abusive relationship is. Like, there are no, you know, spectacular acts of violence. It's all about control and sort of eating away at her sense of self, her sense of personality, the fact that she's lost who she is and she's become what he wants her to be. And I think what makes this film work in the end is just how well observed it is. The fact that, you know, she's like, I've been bad, but he won't love me if he knows how bad I am. That she's so,
I can't do one more thing wrong.
Exactly. I can't do one more thing wrong. You know, she's so, like, her whole life is walking on eggshells and living in a state of constant terror of his disapproval. And he has just ground her down into this nub of a human. And these two friends of hers, these two close friends of hers, are trying to kind of resuscitate her and bring her back to herself. And it's a very slow film in that, like I say, it's really just they're hanging out at this lake house, and you're seeing all these, you know, they're bickering amongst themselves because they're not close anymore. There's a kind of subplot about a missing girl, which is more of a metaphor than anything else. It's not showy, it's not spectacular, but it's really chilling and actually very upsetting. And I think actually, like, Kendrick's performance in this is fantastic. Mm. Really, really, you know, insular and small. You can see that she's withdrawn herself to this tiny kernel of a human being, and she's gradually unfolding the longer she is away from Simon. But it's a very upsetting film. And I think it's one that should have trigger warnings all over the place. Like, for anyone who's been in an abusive relationship, I imagine it's a very upsetting watch. But I thought it was incredibly effective.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I think it might help people also to watch it. You know, the flip side of things being triggering and upsetting is that sometimes it's almost like aversion therapy. It's almost like a catharsis, yeah. I think. And I think there is the potential for this to be that. And I think there is potential for people to watch this and see elements of themselves in it, and maybe be awoken in the way that Alice is, because she would absolutely not, at the beginning of this film, I think, describe her relationship as controlling or abusive as anything else. It's her waking up as much as anything else. And I think what Mary Nighy, and this is her debut feature, I believe, has done really well, is kind of pace out that sort of awakening. So the audience is sort of learning at the same pace she is. Like, we sense something is wrong, but we don't quite know what. We don't know the extent of it. We don't know how it operates until we kind of realize at the same time that she does. So I thought that was really, really well observed. And fair play to Charlie Carrick, who plays Simon, because I think he gets the right balance of a guy who thinks that he's being totally reasonable and everything.
He would not see himself as an abusive partner.
Absolutely not. And even when he's at his scariest, I don't think he realizes what he's doing. And I think it does really well with that. But then, again, you have the warmth and the friendship offered by Sophie and Tess, who are Wumi Masako and, I apologize, I may be pronouncing this wrong, but Kanetio Horn. They have a really brilliant dynamic with her. Yeah. So yeah, I thought this was really, really impressive, especially as a debut film. I thought it was fantastic stuff.
So did I. But I didn't, about the halfway point, I wasn't sure what I felt about it, because it felt like it was taking its sweet time to get anywhere. And then when you sort of get into the rhythm of it, you realize that actually it's taking its time deliberately, and it's missold in its synopsis. They say, you know, two friends stage an intervention, and that's not what this is. They go away and they're gradually drawing this out of it. There's no big confrontation. Like, it's very real, I think. And I think that's the core of its strength for me.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we liked this one.
Yes,
we did. Four stars for this one. Four stars then for Alice Darling.
Alice Darling.
Darling.
And if people are wondering, Mary Nighy is, yes, the daughter of Bill.
Ah, there you go.
Just FYI.
Nepo baby. Nepo baby.
She's
alert.
Been working for quite a while. She's made quite a few shorts. You know, she's earned her stripes.
Only kidding. But only kidding. Next up, Bank of Dave. Bank of Dave, Bank of Dave, which is on Netflix right now, and stars Rory Kinnear and Joel Fry. And this is based on a, as Stephen says, based on a true-ish story.
Yeah, I think Dave is a person who exists, and Dave is a real person who wanted to set up a bank.
He did.
And so that part is true. I think a lot of the rest of what happens here is not true, or less true at the very least. But yes, we're essentially introduced to it via Hugh, who is Joel Fry's character. Last, of course, seen playing a pirate in Our Flag Means Death. And he is a London-based solicitor who is sent by his boss up to Burnley, which they treat as if it's the Arctic.
It's a real place.
It's a real place.
With electricity and running water.
And he's basically sent up there because they've been told that their rich client, Dave, wants to set up his own sort of small bank to help people in the local area with small loans that the regular banks just don't have any truck with, because maybe these people don't have security enough to warrant these loans and everything else. Whereas Dave knows these people, he knows they're good for it, and he wants to help out, and he's donating all the profits to charity, and he wants to do something good for his community. So Hugh sets off to this distant and strange land filled with colourful characters and weird people, and sets about trying to help Dave while the forces of the establishment swing into action against them, embodied by Hugh Bonneville's hedge fund nasty Sir Charles, who is the icon of the banking industry.
Hugh Bonneville,
indeed. I thought this was, it wasn't bad. It has its heart very much in the right place, and I agree with all its lefty philosophizing. My issue with this is that it is so unsubtle that it's very hard to take it seriously. You know, so little things like they are solicitors, but they act like barristers. They literally have the sort of senior solicitor saying to Hugh as he sends him off, you know, well, we have to do stuff for our clients, you know, even when we know they're guilty. And it's like, that's not how lawyers talk. I mean, yes, you do what your clients need because that's literally the job. And it's your job, whatever you think, whether you think they're guilty or innocent, you might be wrong. So you have to do your job anyway. It's just not how lawyers talk. Little things like they were in the magistrate's court and he was calling them Your Honor. And I don't believe that's the right term of address for magistrates. Things like this did take me out of the movie because, you know, they're over-egging the class divide so much that it's kind of embarrassing and it looks like it's played up for Americans and it feels inauthentic, which is unfair because it is a true story and it's an interesting story and it's a guy who's done a lot of good and I would like to kind of just see them do that a little bit more.
I've just got a loan right here, right now. burnleysavingsandloans.co.uk. I just bought a car.
Fantastic. That'll stop.
The Empire Pod Bus.
Oh, God.
We're going to drive around and do podcasts.
Well, he did originally get rich selling minibuses, yeah. So that makes sense. But anyway, yeah, so, like, look, I liked the message. I liked the energy of it. I didn't mention Phoebe Dynevor is Alexandra, who's Dave's niece, I think.
Dave's niece,
who has a little bit of a frisson with Hugh. So it's all very nice and sweet, but I just felt it could have been played a little bit closer to reality without actually losing a lot of that charm.
Yeah, it's from the same director as Fisherman's Friend, so I think we know what we're in for with this. But I enjoyed it. It's very broad. Mm. Subtlety is not its strong point, but I like Joel Fry. I always have.
Yeah.
And I think he deserves a starring vehicle. And even though he's kind of tampering down his natural charm a little bit, I would say.
In fairness, I think he's actually, you know, met some solicitors. The way he was kind of slouching over with his bag, walking into work at the beginning and almost kind of scowling mindlessly as he walks, that felt real to me, I'm going to be honest with you.
He should quit and do a movie podcast. That's what he should do. But, you know, I enjoyed it. It's the three-stariest film to ever three a star, as far as I'm concerned.
That seems fair.
Yeah. It's fun enough if you like that kind of thing. Bank of Dave. Bank on Bank of Dave right now on Netflix. And finally this week, there is a film. It's out on Sky. It is called The Estate. James watched it, so he has to talk about it. James?
So last week on the podcast, we talked about New Year's resolutions. I think it was last week anyway. I'm sure we did. And one thing I didn't say, I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try and be less negative about some of the films that I see. Some of the films I see. And obviously we didn't start off well because I had to watch Ennis fucking Maine last week. But that aside, I was like, no, week two. I'll start again. And then you made me watch this.
You could have watched Babylon.
I could have watched Babylon. It could have been worse. But
so
I mean,
it's so much worse.
It's written, directed by Dean Craig, perhaps best known for writing Death at a Funeral, I want to say. And this has, on the face of it, this fantastic cast. It's got Toni Collette, it's got Anna Faris, David Duchovny's in this, Kathleen Turner's in this.
Well, it feels very much like a cousin to Death at a Funeral.
Yes. And Death at a Funeral is not a fantastic film. Either version of it is not fantastic.
I disagree with that. I think the original version, Frank Oz version, the British version, is really good.
It's fine. But this isn't fine. Not to spoil it for you, Chris. This is not a fine film. Because I think it takes a certain skill to take a cast this good and make them all so uniformly terrible. And this film actually manages to do it. So the basic setup for this is you have two sisters, Macy and Savannah, played by Toni Collette and Anna Faris, and you only know this from watching the title sequence, the animated title sequence. They run some kind of cafe, which was left to them by their dad, and it's dying on its ass. Like, they're running out of money, they're going to lose the business, it's all going horribly wrong. And then they find out from their mother that their aunt Hilda, played by Kathleen Turner, is dying, and she has lots and lots and lots of money. So they come up with this harebrained scheme that they're going to go and see Aunt Hilda, and they're going to ingratiate herself with this aunt from whom they are estranged, and they're going to get written into her will, because of course that's going to work. Unfortunately, when they get to Aunt Hilda's house, they find out they are not the only ones who have that idea, because their cousin Beatrice, played by Rosemary DeWitt, has turned up with her husband, played by Ron Livingston, and they are also after the cash. But that's not all, because their other cousin Dick, played by David Duchovny, who, when he's not trying to fuck them, also wants to get the money. And so you have this group of genuinely terrible people, to a man and woman. They are dreadful, dreadful human beings, all trying to ingratiate themselves to Kathleen Turner, who is the worst of all of them. And it kind of speaks to what this film is, that Toni Collette's Macy is the most likable character in the film and yet is also a terrible human being. And all the way through this, there is no one to root for. So you don't like anyone. You don't enjoy spending time with them. And it's kind of like, there's a little bit of farce, there's a little bit of comedy of cringe in here, but the jokes don't land. It's not funny. It's not amusing. It doesn't do anything new from a plot perspective, and you can see where the ending is going a mile away. And I just felt I absolutely had to endure this. It's only an hour and a half, which is the most positive thing I can say about it. I got to the end of this and I was just like, this is just so, it annoyed me so much, because these people, the people in this, are genuinely great. Anna Faris is a fantastic comedic actress. None of that is on display in this film. Toni Collette is a legendary actor. None of that is on display. Dave Duchovny is just awful in this as well. And again, he's really funny when he wants to. All of these people can do really good work when they're given the material, and they just aren't given it here. And so this film made me cross. I cannot recommend anyone watch it under any circumstances unless they are actively being tortured.
James has written Dean Craig out of his will as a result. Yeah,
100%.
I had a little bit more
of course
grace
did.
With it than you did. I don't think it's a good film. I think it's very poorly shot. You can see the low budget shining through. But, you know, it's kind of old school in a way. How many films start these days with an animated title sequence? I quite like that. It finishes with the words, "The End." I quite like that.
I mean,
everything else in between, not so great. But hey.
I very much enjoyed the end part. That can certainly be said.
The bit where it ended was
the bit where it ended was fabulous.
We don't have an Empire review of this, but I think... You sound like you're in the one-star camp.
I probably am in the one-star camp for this. It's somewhere between a one and a two. I almost think giving it two is a disservice to perfectly serviceable two-star films. Because the thing with this is, it's like, you know, like two stars oftentimes, it's like, oh, it's a two-star film, but if you like the genre, you might quite enjoy yourself, even though it's not very good. This just feels like it's just not an enjoyable film, regardless. It's just, you suffer it.
And you suffer it.
I don't think you should.
All right. Well, there you go. That is it for this week's Empire Podcast. We have one more show to go before next live show. This is episode 548. Our next live show is 550, and there are still some tickets on sale at kingsplace.co.uk Thursday, February 2nd, if you want to come along and see that. And we may be at some point in the week pulling the trigger on releasing streaming passes for that also. So keep your eyes peeled if you can't make it to London on Thursday, February 2nd to join us for episode 550 of the podcast. But if you can, we would love to have you. As I say, still some tickets available for that. kingsplace.co.uk. We cannot wait. It is going to be a ton of fun. But that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun when I may not be here. Oh, yeah. But we will be joined by the governor, the big man himself. That's right, Paul Ince. No, it is Steven Spielberg. Woo! Steven Spielberg will be making a triumphant return to the Empire Podcast, unless, of course, Helen forgets to press record.
I mean, look,
which
it's
is
happened.
Always a possibility. It's happened before.
With me and Nicole Kidman, it's actually happened.
Yeah. With me and Joss Whedon, yeah.
Jodie Foster as well, wasn't it? I'm pretty
only
sure it was
Jodie
Foster.
Only 5 minutes.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman was 5 minutes.
Meryl
and
Streep.
Then I had to say to her, I'm very sorry, we've got to start again.
Didn't we run out of battery with Meryl Streep? And we had to run to get batteries.
Or literally.
We had to run to get batteries in the middle of an interview.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And then, of course, there was a time me and Ali Plum went to interview Titus Welliver and somehow managed to lose the recorder en route from... Did I hear about this?
No.
Me and Ali went to interview Titus Welliver a few years ago, and Ali put the Marantz, the Zoom, into his bag as he left the office. And at some point between the office and the place where we were interviewing Titus Welliver, the Marantz vanished.
I actually do remember this because I had paid for said Marantz, which cost me about £400.
Yes.
Anyway, barring
it can,
that.
It can happen to anybody, but it won't happen to Helen O'Hara.
No,
press
not
record
tomorrow.
Twice on this one. Press
yep.
record twice on this
record
one.
Twice. Okay.
Record
yep.
twice.
Gonna make sure the numbers are going.
Yep, that's yep. it. Keep glancing down. Stephen, can I just stop you there? Can you do the last 20 minutes again? That's all you need to do. It'll be
all
fine.
I need to do.
Someone else will be on that podcast as well, but I can't remember who. What do you want from me? Organization. Anyway. It's time to say goodbye to my two colleagues of such lethal cunning. Goodbye to James Dyer, a.k.a. the Pilot Plus Man.
Yeah, Pilot Man, that's me.
Mr.
Goodbye.
Pilot Plus.
That's it. They call me Mr. Pilot Plus.
Yes. And it's goodbye from Little Miss Podcast, Helen O'Hara.
And now I may feel like I should be trying to hug you in an inappropriate manner, but I won't. I've taken those HR lessons to heart.
Yes, I've fallen for that trick once too often. Never again.
Toodaloo, everybody.
Little Miss HR would be an amazing book. Anyways, goodbye from me as well. I'm off to get to further grips with the Mr. Men and Little Miss series. It's getting quite raunchy, folks. I'm not going to lie. I may not be ready. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.